The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is drip.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts.
Woo!
Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us. Another five-star Friday. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. Sean 96.1. WSBT, the sports leader, along with former Notre Dame quarterback Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers, and Friday is here. I've already had my wings. Do you have yours on the way?
I've got a wrap coming.
Okay.
And some chili.
A wrap and chili. This isn't really a chili day, is it?
No, it's not, but I don't know. I just was kind of in the mood, and Five Stars never let me down on either of those yet.
They do have good chili. I remember having that once.
I think, though, that the appetite is there. I might have to also get some wings at some point, too, during the show.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you never know when you're going to be out and needing a little bit more protein in your system, so it's a good thing that you know we can always go back to the wings. And the wings are the special today, correct?
That's correct. You've got the 1-pound and the 2-pound options. And for those that listen to our show, we do now have the 2-pound challenge, right?
Is this official now?
Well, the 1-pound, we talked about the 1-pound is definitely doable. The 1-pound challenge, you have to eat the 1-pound during a commercial break. We thought, though, to make it worth it, that it had to be 2 pounds.
I almost think that you need to go to 3 pounds or so.
Two pounds.
I know I've seen you manage it during a commercial break.
Well, I haven't tried the 2 pounds yet.
You haven't done the 2 pounds? You've only done the 1 pound?
I've only done the 1 pound.
So you've done the 1 pound during the commercial break.
Yes.
Okay. I had 1 pound before the show started, and I think that was a good choice because last week I tried to to eat mine once we started the show, and it just didn't work. Too much sauce and too much goodness on my fingers and my lips to make it happen during the show.
So that's why you ate it beforehand.
That's
right. And now you're feeling pretty good?
I am feeling pretty good. So we are good to go. I mean, we've got we're just a little bit more than a week away from the start of fall training camp for
Notre
Dame.
Is it
really? It is. A week. Now, this is still unofficial. We have not got the official word, but all the birds are chirping out there that it's going to happen a week from Sunday is going to be day one down in Culver.
Okay.
Sunday, an interesting start day. Last year it was Friday, and I think the last couple of years it's been on a Friday. But
okay.
It'll be a Sunday this year.
Yeah.
So.
But we don't know yet officially.
We do not have the official word, but that's what I've been told. And we're 38 days away from the official kickoff of the season, September 2nd. That is Labor Day. It's a Monday night, which will be interesting, too. And when Notre Dame takes on Louisville, and you'll hear it right here, a 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We're going to talk about the backup quarterback, Phil Jurkovec, in a minute here, Evan. But
it's official? He's the backup?
I don't think he's going to come out of nowhere and surge to the lead, over the course of fall camp. But
I'm hearing some more buzz about another Notre Dame quarterback.
Ooh, which one?
Freshman, Brendan Clark.
Hearing some good things about him this summer?
I am hearing some good things about him this summer.
Hmm. So maybe there's a little competition for that number two spot. Is that
good.
What you're saying?
I think that's good, though.
I mean, yeah, I think it'd be great.
I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but I think that's still the concern, obviously, is you have two very inexperienced young, collegiate inexperienced young quarterbacks vying for that number two spot.
Yeah. So we will see what happens there. And so we'll talk about Phil Jurkovec in a minute. I wanted to ask you first, Notre Dame, during the Liverpool football match, soccer match,
football.
Whatever you want. Yeah, exactly. At Notre Dame Stadium last week between Liverpool and Borussia Dortmund, they announced that October 12th, the USC game, this is probably no surprise, but the USC game is going to be an Irish wear green-out game. So my question to you, Evan Sharpley, is should they wear the 1977 throwbacks that you and your Irish teammates wore in 2007 against USC?
Okay, first off, every single home game should be a green out.
I agree.
Whether they wear the green jerseys or not.
Whether they wear them or not, yeah.
That was off topic. We've talked about the shirt before. The answer to your question
But we know that's not going to happen because the shirt is a blue shirt this year. But
right.
Go ahead.
Wholeheartedly, yes. Okay. Let's bring those back. They're probably one of my favorite alternates that we wore.
Yeah.
I think they look really cool, but we should probably at this point bring them back so we can get that bad taste out of our mouth from 2007.
That's a good point.
When we lost. And I think it'd be a good time to do that.
And they are the more, not Kelly green, but the more bright green and more yellowish pants.
Kind of like a Green Bay Packer-ish type look.
Yeah, that's a good call.
But we had some cool socks, too. We had, they were like the pro NFL ones where they were high, and then you had like the multicolored
the
top stripe mm-hmm. with both the green and then the gold, too.
Really good look, I think.
I thought so.
And I think probably the reason they left a bad taste in people's mouths is just because of the outcome of that game. But, I mean, you guys were the decided underdog in that game as well.
And I got to think, too, that Under Armour would probably come out with a cool shoe to match that as well. If
that's
they
true.
Did. We just had, at that time, it was Adidas, and we it was just black.
Yeah.
So I think we had a few guys try to spat, you know, with the tape. That usually got shut down. And
did
then
it?
Finally it was just like everyone was trying to do it. And the support staff was like, all right, we'll let it fly. Because there were certain rules that Adidas had in their contract where you couldn't cover up
things.
The logo. So it was like, okay, you can tape down to a certain spot on your shoe, but anywhere past that, it's not going to work.
Really, they wouldn't even let you, you know, like draw stuff on or anything like that?
We did for a while, and, you know, you had guys like – if guys like Brady Quinn or Tom Zbikowski did it, then
– they could get away with
yeah,
it?
Yeah, then. But if you were at – you know, at that time, too, I was a freshman. It was like, okay, I'm going to try to scribble something as small as possible here if I'm going to write anything anywhere.
That's funny. Yeah, and that was the – 2007 was also the 30-year anniversary of the 77
right.
team and the Trojan horse and the whole thing. So that was a big part of why you guys wore those uniforms that day. But I agree, those are some of the best looking uniforms of all the retros and alternate uniforms that Notre Dame
big
has ever
fan.
Worn.
Yeah, I kept that jersey. That one's a nice one.
I can imagine. The other ones, the other of the Shamrock series uniforms, one of my favorites is the one they wore down in Dallas. It was the all-white mm-hmm. uniform, and then it had the really shiny gold helmet and all that stuff.
There was a similar one then when they played at Michigan under the lights, the all-white with just the green numbers.
Yeah.
I thought those were pretty sharp, too.
But the Shamrock helmet,
if I
remember right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yep, I think so, too. Let me ask you this, because we just talked about camp starting a little bit more than a week. So that means that the summer workouts are winding down for the guys, and they've been on campus doing their workouts, a lot of different conditioning on social media. Around the same time, I think, was it just before the Liverpool game at Notre Dame Stadium, the indoor facility?
Yeah.
We saw some pictures from that. But so let me just first some of your impressions on that, just what you've seen from that so far.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And, you know, to keep up with the Joneses, you got to do those things. It's a really neat place, you know, for these guys to be able to train year round now, especially during some of the colder winter months.
Yeah.
And then also just what it will do, I think, to free up some time, and then, you know, shared space between all of the varsity different sports. So now you have the Loftus Center, and now you have the new ginormous indoor football facility too.
Right.
Both with field turf. I'll tell you what it sure does. I mean, it sticks out when you can't miss that thing.
That's for sure.
I mean, it's a big facade, and I know how high it is, too. Almost probably like an embarrassment of how high. I mean, you can do
the punters will actually be able to get some punts off.
And that
in
was
there.
Always the thing in Loftus is a lot of times the specialists, whether it was kicking and punting, you'd have to go outside. They'd have to go outside to do their work.
Yeah.
So you were limited. You know, there were some times where a punter would take a full punt, right, and it'd hit the top, and then they'd shoot a ball out of a jugs gun for the guys to actually return. I mean, that's not an issue now, so you can run full practices, special teams.
It'll be good for pro day. for that matter, because the guys always had to, they'd be inside watching a lot of the skill guys and timing them and stuff like that, and then you have to go outside across the street to see the punter and everything, so everybody can just stay in one place and do it all. When you were this far out, what's kind of your mindset now with just a little bit more than a week to go before the start of fall training camp?
It's kind of like the calm before the storm, right? I mean, you're trying to, you know, rest a little bit and recover. You know, a lot of it is kind of tidying up what you did over the summer, kind of putting a bow on that, reviewing where you are as far as strength and conditioning, and then from a mental side too, you know, what you did in regards to learning the playbook. But now, I mean, if the flip hasn't already switched, you better switch it, because it's a totally different mentality even compared to the summer. Because now you know that you are prepping for the season in terms of getting ready to play on a weekly basis. So, you know, a lot of it is it's a little bit of R&R and kind of checking out, but then making sure that you're locked in, because once it starts, I mean, it doesn't end then until December or January.
January, yeah. At some point, depending on which bowl game you go to, essentially. And, of course, everyone hopes that it ends in January sometime, because that means you're either at the very least playing in a New Year's Day game, or you're playing in the college football playoff like they were last year. So Ian Book came in, and on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, Darren Pritchett and I will hit some specifics on Ian Book later tonight at 5 o'clock.
Have they named captains yet, or still no captains?
Last I heard, they have still not. I would assume that we're going to get that next week.
Okay.
Maybe they know, but we don't. Right. I would assume we'll find that out next week, unless there's some kind of social media announcement before camp starts. I guess, you know, that could be in the works too. But no, nothing public anyway.
Okay.
I know who the captains are, and that's something we talked about at the start of summer.
Yeah.
What's going on with the captains? Ian Book is the starter, the incumbent. We assume he's going to be the starter. Phil Jurkovec going through his first full spring this past spring after serving as the scout team guy, the number three quarterback during the 2018 football season as a true freshman, 6'5", 225 pounds. Phil Jurkovec now going into his sophomore season. He only played in two games last year, threw two passes, didn't complete one. He had over 11,000 yards in high school with 71 touchdown passes. So, I mean, he obviously had a great high school career. 24/7 Sports had him as the number five dual threat quarterback in the country, number 66 overall as a recruit coming into Notre Dame. So let's hear first Brian Kelly from back in the spring discussing the then freshman quarterback, Phil Jurkovec.
You know, we've had a number of sessions where I've said, you know, he's still cooking. I mean, he's still growing. There's a lot of things that he learned today about recognition of when the ball needs to come out of his hand, a clock in his head, so to speak. You know, those are all things that getting a game like this today really helps him in that awareness. I think he, you know, will learn a lot from today's experience about awareness. I think sometimes when you're a quarterback, you get too locked into progressions. You know, he's got to get the ball out of his hands and take some one-on-one matchups when he gets them as well. And that'll come. It's just a matter of time.
So there's Brian Kelly on Phil Jurkovec. Just some general thoughts on him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that we talked about this last time, we really went in depth on Phil Dracovic's progression, and Brian Kelly talking about it's going to take time. The problem is, I mean, if he's going to play at all this
now, he's a snap away.
Right. He doesn't have time.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge of balancing that, both, you know, for a player and changing your mindset, because now you're not the third string guy. Now you're number two, and it's time to play, or you could be playing right away. But then for the coaches, too, kind of balancing – you don't want to put too much pressure on a guy.
Yeah.
But you also gotta, there's also gotta be an element of, okay, we gotta speed up. Our learning curve does have to speed up. So whatever that looks like, does that mean you're gonna spend a little bit more time watching film, a little more time in the playbook? Because really, that's what it's gonna come down to. Success when you're a younger player has, in my mind, a little less to do with how skilled you are and a lot more on how quickly you pick up the adjusting to the speed of the game at the college level, and then can you be and understand how your protections work, your hots, your sights. Can you check out of a pass play and get to a run play if you have a box that, you know, a run box that dictates you doing that?
Yeah.
So, I think, and that's always, you know, from the coaching standpoint is, how do we expedite this without making this player feel frustrated or, overly frustrated? But at the same time, we got to get him ready to play.
Well, and it's interesting because even though it's the same, it's different. I mean, we were sitting here last year when we thought Brandon Wimbush was going to be the guy, and he started out the season as the guy, talking about accuracy and some of these same things. There are similarities, but they're obviously not the exact same guy. But one of the things, you mentioned the word frustration, and Phil Jurkovec, after the Blue Gold game, was really frustrated when he was talking with the media. I mean, because, again, I think Brandon Wimbush is even more of a true runner, but Phil Jurkovec is also a dual threat guy. He was a runner as well in high school, as well as a guy who threw for a lot of yards and a lot of touchdown passes. But in the Blue Gold game, similar to Brandon Wimbush in the first few games of last season, when it was obvious, especially against Ball State, Vanderbilt, that they wanted him in the pocket. There weren't a lot of designed runs for him. And there was a lot of that for Phil Jurkovec in the Blue Gold game as well. It was stay in the pocket, and the times that he did try to go, he was sacked 12 times because of the rules, but he was frustrated because I remember him saying, it's not real football. He didn't have the option to go out there and run. So how much effect do you think that could have on him as well? Just the fact that they essentially adjusted the rules to make him stay in the pocket and kind of took him out of his true game.
Well, I mean, it was probably frustrating, but I don't know how much of the run is going to be part of his game at this level. I wouldn't put him in the same classification as far as explosiveness as a runner as, say, a guy like Brandon Wimbush.
Yeah.
I think offenses now, at the pro level too, but especially in high school and college, is you have a lot more guys that, even if they aren't true dual threats, they have to be able to run the offense and know when to pull it and be able to pick up, 8 yards.
Kind of like Ian Book last year.
Right,
Solve it with your feet if you can. But I would say
though, head to head, I mean, I think Ian Book is a more talented runner than Phil Jurkovec is.
Okay.
Certainly Phil has the size at 6'5", 225, or 230, where he's going to be able to pack a little bit more of a punch if he has to.
Yeah.
And that's not to say we haven't really seen it. We saw it a little bit at the high school level. His stats passing speak for himself, but he also did run the football too in high school. And played in an offense very similar to what Notre Dame does, where there's going to be some zone read, where you're maybe reading the end man on the line of scrimmage, and being able to pull it and run. So I think, time will tell. It is much different. I learned that very early. Not that I was a guy who was, we ran a little bit of option and did some things at
not
the,
as much zone
read
and things, yeah.
But when I got to Notre Dame, we didn't do much of that. But even outside of the pocket, the guys are faster and the guys hit a lot harder at the college level.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I'm sure, and Brian Kelly probably said it best, is that experience helps. You'll learn how your skill set works and when and how you can run. Ian Book did it. He solved it with his feet, whether it was moving in the pocket, making a throw, or it was extending plays and then maybe turning a negative play into at least something that, wasn't going to be a huge loss. So for me to kind of go out on a limb, I don't know what it's going to look like. If Phil Jurkovec is QB1, is it going to be more run heavy? I don't know. Could it be similar to maybe like a Deshaun Kizer, who's a bigger mobile quarterback, where they had some design runs where, he was maybe following the tailback. They had a few runs like that too. So, you don't have to be, I think dual threat is thrown around a little bit too much now, and a lot of that has to do with how offenses are set up.
Sure.
By and large, you have to be able to pick up 5 to 8 yards if you're going to pull it.
One of the things that was an issue that we saw in the spring for Phil Jurkovec was his accuracy, specifically with the shorter passes. Has a nice strong arm, can get it downfield. We would see him make some of those connections downfield, and offensive coordinator Chip Long was asked about Jurkovec's accuracy again during spring practice, and here's his answer to that.
Right, we have obviously had 2 years to figure that out, so we know how to protect him with that. Obviously, it's my job to put him in the best situation to work with that, and a lot of that is just is confidence, you know, for a young guy. And, you know, he has to work on it. For this offense to be, or any offense for that matter, the quarterback has to be accurate. We have to be able to take the gift throws and obviously hit the ones when we need it the most. And he's been throwing a nice deep ball. But I think more of anything is just understanding the offense, going through his progression, and once he gets confident with that, that ball will come out a lot cleaner. You know, he was a great quarterback in high school. I saw him throw, so, you know, he'll get it fixed.
Going through his progressions is one thing that Chip Long talked about there. And so one of the things Phil Jurkovec also said after the Blue Gold game is that film study, those kind of things, the pre-snap recognition as well as the ability to recognize things quicker during the play was something that he was going to focus a lot of time on, Evan. So when you're talking about accuracy, it seems like maybe more a mechanical thing, but how much can that, just knowing things a little bit more and that film study and that kind of thing, help his accuracy?
It lets you play free and easy. You know, it's more reactive than
avoid the thinking,
than processing information. You know, you're still processing it, but it almost is happening seamless. You know, if you have a specific specific progression read where it's based on a safety rotating down, as soon as you start to see that rotation, whether it happens pre-snap or when you snap the ball and they rotate late, that may automatically trigger you. Okay, I'm skipping these two parts of my progression, and now I'm getting to the backside of this route combination.
Okay,
so you know, and that usually how that works. And in my case too is you continue to watch film, you take on-field reps or mental reps, and then you get in your playbook and you really study. You ask older guys questions. You're very inquisitive, and then it's almost like one day you show up and you just started doing it. It kind of just clicks, and you don't remember any other way.
Right.
You know, when I still watch games now. And we ran the Patriots offense when I played, so if I ever watch a Patriots NFL game, and whether I'm hearing a call that, say, Tom Brady is making, or I see, you know, specific plays, it's like I revert back to, you know, watching film and reacting on, okay, I see what this guy's doing here, I know where the ball's going.
It's like you're hypnotized. You just snap into it.
Oh, yeah, you are. And so for a young quarterback like this, you know, I applaud him for saying that's what his focus has to be, because that will eliminate more of the physical mistakes. Because if you're thinking and trying to react, and I remember my first fall camp, I thought I forgot how to throw a football. It was like I'm talking to my parents and my high school coach, and I'm like, that was the one thing I thought I could rely on. Uh-huh. Was just my physical. How many reps have I taken up to this point,
yeah,
to get to this level? And now I can't throw a spiral. You know, I can't locate where the ball is going. I've never had that problem, but there was information overload on. You know, I was struggling just to call the play in the huddle.
Yeah.
So I'm breaking the huddle. I'm not sure what play we're running sometimes. I'm like, man, I don't like, what am I going to just make this up? So, you know, there were plays where I would take a 5-step drop and literally not know what the route combination was.
Wow.
So not only did I not understand maybe what pressures or blitzes or coverages, I didn't even know what our guys were doing.
Well, do you think that there's probably some of that going on for Jurkovec in the spring, considering going back to some things we've talked about, the fact that he was the scout team quarterback last year and he wasn't necessarily involved in running Notre Dame's offense, that he still kind of was learning as he went during the spring?
We don't know. You know, we don't know exactly what that balance was. We know he was running the scout team. We don't know if he had any time running Notre Dame's offense or being part of those installs in the playbook. I got to think he did, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But it does. You know, if you're taking your drop and you're trying to process what is happening versus reacting to what is happening, the physical side then becomes much more exacerbated, and you see it more often. And I think then too the physical mistakes will happen because it's almost like you're back there kind of guessing.
Yeah.
And if you're second guessing what you're doing or where you should be doing it, you're not going to throw a ball with a lot of confidence or conviction.
Makes a lot of sense. And confidence is a word that you just touched on right there. And here's Chip Long with his thoughts on Phil Jurkovec's confidence.
I mean, he's a confident quarterback. It's just the confidence in just learning a new offense for him at a young age and getting a whole lot of reps, going through his progressions like every other young quarterback. You know, I'm not worried about Phil right now. I'm wanting him to get better every single day, right? We can't fall back or plateau, which I think he did a nice job as a freshman quarterback. Usually they hit that plateau halfway through spring and have about a few bad practices. He hasn't had that. It's just the timing and the speed of the game he has to get used to. And once he does, he'll be fine.
And all of these things that we've talked about kind of lead to the confident. He's a confident person, and I think that's part of probably why he was so frustrated at the end of spring with the performance that he had when he completed, it was about 57% of his passes that day and had 6 3-and-out drives with the offense. But again, you go through the summer now. He's got a lot of time to work on some different things. One thing, we talked about a lot last year, was the mechanics with Brandon Wimbush. And I know we've talked the mechanic of it, kind of just like a batter's swing. It doesn't matter how you get from point A to point C, as long as you get there, essentially, whether you raise your hands or any of that kind of stuff. And with Phil Jurkovec, I know he's kind of tinkered with his mechanics over the years. So are you worried maybe that there's too much tinkering going on, that maybe he's thinking about that kind of stuff too much?
I hope he's not tinkering. I mean, that's, you don't want to mess with that too much, because I think a lot of quarterbacks, when they try to do that, you know, they're trying to fix something that maybe isn't necessarily broken.
Yeah.
Is it mechanically sound? Is it pure? Maybe not, but you could look at a handful of guys that are in the NFL that have performed at a very high level where it doesn't necessarily pass the eye test. Philip Rivers is a good example. Cam Newton's another guy, too, and he's actually done some tweaks this offseason as well. But those are guys that have, I guess you could say, quote-unquote, gotten away with poor mechanics.
Yeah.
And have been all-pro quarterbacks.
It just works.
So, you know, as long as the thing that is, I think, is maybe concerning or frustrating for Phil and why maybe you would consider tinkering is if accuracy isn't there, then there's a concern, right? So if it doesn't look good, I mean, Peyton Manning was one of those guys. I would never teach anyone to throw like Peyton Manning, but he was really accurate.
Yeah.
He couldn't throw a spiral, I don't think, the last 5 years of his career, but he was always accurate with the football. So it worked.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's...
But he also was a big film study guy.
Oh, yeah,
he knew
yeah.
everything that was going to happen before it
that
happened.
That was his game. Yeah. I mean, and then he knew where it was going to go. So... So I would say try to stay away from tinkering on those things. You know, focus on improving your accuracy and doing some drills like that. But, you know, the tough part of the catch-22 is if the mechanics are what's causing the accuracy issues.
That's a big, big, big possibility. All right. So, again, we are 35 days away from the start of the Notre Dame football season, Notre Dame versus Louisville, and all Fighting Irish football games right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We expect fall camp to begin next weekend. We'll be there and have all kinds of coverage for you both here on Leprechaun Lunch every Friday from noon until 1, as well as Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 5 to 7 every weekday night. You can also, of course, find all the podcasts for all those shows on iTunes and at WSBTRadio.com. We've got some more Notre Dame conversation coming up next. Chase Claypool, Jarrett Patterson, the Pac-12 talking about having some 9 a.m. kickoff times. We will hit all that and more when we return at Five Star Dive Bar. The smoked wings are the special today. $7 for a pound, $12 for 2 pounds. You get fries with that and your choice of sauces as well. Smoked chicken wings at Five Star Dive Bar, 526 South Main Street in downtown Elkhart. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. John and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch coming to you as always from Five Star Dive Bar, 526 South Main Street in the former State Theater. You can look for the marquee outside. I believe it is Whiskey Highway on stage tonight.
You're not on stage tonight?
I'm not on stage tonight.
All right.
And, of course, live music every Friday and Saturday at Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart with former Notre Dame baseball player and quarterback Evan Sharpley, Sean Sayers. Do you have more food coming?
It's for my daughter.
Oh, sure it is.
It is. She gets the chicken strips,
okay,
and fries.
All right. Good enough. Those look
but if she
tasty,
doesn't get here
but I'm
soon
glad they're
enough
for your daughter.
She doesn't get here soon enough, though. There is a chance I may sneak one.
May hit some of those up. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we were talking about Phil Jurkovec as we get ready for fall training camp starting for Notre Dame next week. And the season is just a little bit more than a month away. By the time we converge next Friday, it'll be less than a month away.
Oh, boy.
The start of the season coming up, and we've got all these.
Is it a stressful time of the year for you?
It's not stressful yet. That's on the horizon. And I've actually got a 3-day weekend coming up this weekend so that it reduces the stress.
Once the season starts, is it pedal to the metal for you?
It's actually sometimes it's nice because there's always something that you're working on
right
during the week. You know, you're always moving on to the next thing. You stay a lot busier, and just depending on things when things pop up. Obviously, sometimes it gets a little too busy, but that's part of the fun of it
you
too.
You did the post game show last year, so
yes.
you were up pretty late then.
That's right.
Yeah,
and I'll be up late Labor Day night because Reggie Brooks and I will be.
Oh, Reggie, huh?
We'll be continuing with that Notre Dame football post game show.
What is your record on shortest radio post game show?
I think we got one just under 2 hours
really?
Last year. Yeah.
Wow,
if I remember,
that's pretty good.
Or maybe right at 2 hours.
Well,
we hit the mark a couple
even
times.
Even so, that's pretty good. I mean, you guys probably were, stay on point and bum, bum, bum.
That's
keep
right.
Keep it going.
Keep it moving.
Yeah.
Keep the needle moving forward. Tip of the spear, as Galen Hayes said,
there we go.
With the defensive ends for Notre Dame. Tip of the spear. Keep it moving forward. Yeah, so Reggie Brooks and I will be back doing the post-game show. And, I was kind of happy because only one night game at Notre Dame Stadium this year. That's the USC game.
Right.
But already we've got the Louisville game at night, and I imagine we're going to have a lot of other
Georgia now
night
too.
Right? Oh yeah, Georgia yeah. as well. Thank you. I knew there was another one. Of course, I forgot the most marquee game there was, but yeah, Georgia's going to be, and that's interesting too.
Are you going down to that one?
I don't think so. We don't get to hit the road for too many. I'm still working on what happens next year when they go to Lambeau Field.
Sean and Sharpley road trip.
I'm telling you, I think we need to get an RV.
I think
we've brought this up before.
We
get an RV. We head out there. We do all the shows that weekend from the RV out in the parking
Sounds
lot of Lambeau.
Good.
I think that needs to happen for sure. But that Georgia game you mentioned that's going to be a night game, and apparently CBS only gets one primetime game per year. And typically, it has been Alabama LSU.
Right.
And this will be the first time in like a decade that Alabama LSU has not been CBS's primetime game.
It's crazy.
It is.
I saw someone say, as if Notre Dame's not irrelevant, why is this happening?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, I don't know if it has anything to do with whether you're relevant or not. It's just Notre Dame fans tune in to watch.
that's part of relevance, because I did see somebody kind of split it up, the difference between football relevance and sort of your curating relevance and that whole thing. I mean, there's football relevance, too. They were just in the college football playoff, and then you've got the, we could go down that rabbit hole, but I think there's some kind of relevance for Notre Dame because everyone wants them in primetime.
Always.
Yeah, and we're going to see more games in prime time. Speaking of times of game,
okay,
because Fox has got they've changed their TV deal. They've got this pregame show we've talked about that's going to have Urban Meyer, Brady Quinn, Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush, and that whole crew, and they're going to go from 11 a.m. and lead up until the noon kickoff, when their noon game is going to be, instead of in prime time, their big game is going to be at noon every week. They're kind of trying to carve their own niche. And so,
well, there were some studies done on, there was some money there.
Yeah, and there wasn't that big a difference, apparently, in TV audience between the noon kickoffs and the 8 o'clock kickoffs. And when you think about it, like Texas, Oklahoma has traditionally been a noon game for a long time. Ohio State and Michigan has been a noon game. I mean, if it's a big game, if it matters, people will tune in to watch it regardless. So that's kind of what Fox is going with. Well, here's a twist on that, because the Pac-12 has traditionally played the bulk of their games at like 10 o'clock Eastern time, 7 o'clock Pacific time, p.m., of course.
And a lot of coaches have complained that their teams don't get enough exposure. The East Coast doesn't get to see the Pac-12 teams because they're kicking off so late. So with that in mind, the Pac-12 this week has said that they're discussing the idea of 9 a.m. Pacific time games. So you could potentially have USC and Stanford noon Eastern time, but 9 a.m. in Los Angeles or Palo Alto kicking off. As a former player, what do you think about this?
Players are going to hate it. They will hate it. But from a viewership standpoint, I think it's probably a smart move.
Not a bad idea.
If you're trying to get more people to watch some of the Pac games, especially out west. I mean, I know traditionally you might have a 10 p.m., 11 p.m. game sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, Washington State, Washington at 11 p.m.
And sometimes that's not bad either, like when we get done doing a Notre Dame game and you've
right.
been there all day, you come home, you have a beverage, and you kind of wind down watching one of those Pac-12 games.
But you probably fall asleep at halftime.
Yeah, you probably do. And with me, you most definitely do.
So, I like it, but I know the players are not. I mean, if you're playing at 9 a.m., that means that you're what time?
You're out of bed at like between 5 and 6 a.m., right?
It might even be earlier than that, to
yeah,
be honest with you.
Depending on where you are.
You know, when we played a noon kick, a lot of times our wake-up call then was like 6 or 6:30.
Really?
For like usually it was like an optional breakfast.
Yeah.
But I think team meal then was at 8:30 or 9.
And what time would you usually get to the stadium for a road game?
We'd usually have probably two to three hours before kickoff. So we'd be able to go out, kind of walk around, you know, throw the football around a little bit if we wanted to. Go back in, we'd suit up, we'd go back out for like our pre-warm-up warm-up.
The walk around,
yeah,
and the whole thing.
And then we'd go out and actually do our shortened but actual, you know, pre-game prep.
Yeah.
And then back in and then back out for the game. So I would probably say around 2 or 3 hours before the game started we would arrive. So, you know, for a night, I mean, that would put you at the stadium at 6.
Yeah, so, I mean, you could be getting up at 4 a.m.
7 at the latest, I would say, that you would get there, so 2 hours.
And who's going to go to bed? You might be in your rooms, but who's going to bed before midnight?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's yeah, I mean, your schedule then, the previous night, I mean, you'd be able lights out at 8.
Well, and if you said before, you guys were in a hotel, whether it was a home game or
right.
a road game, so they do control that aspect of things, and you've got curfews and all that kind of stuff, but still, I mean, that is an early wake-up call, and I guess the only benefit would be at whatever time it is, even if it's 6 a.m., regardless of what city you're in, the traffic is going to be a lot lighter to get
yeah.
you to the stadium.
Probably won't need a police escort.
Yeah, and then tailgaters and the whole thing. I just can't imagine a 9
a.m. Man, the tailgaters will hate it too.
I know, and then you're done by 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
You'll like that, though.
Yeah, but that's pretty rough. If yes, I can't believe there. But it sounds like we're probably going to see it a couple different times. It'll be interesting who they make do it. You know, like will it be Oregon or Oregon State taking on Arizona State, kind of maybe the mid to lower tier teams
right.
experiment with it to see what they think or see how it goes with them first before they make
yeah.
the Stanfords and Washingtons and whoever do it. It's a really interesting concept, and I don't know. You've got the experience
as a
player.
Yeah, there'll be pushback from the players.
I just don't think I would like it at all. But it's got a lot more to do with TV. And speaking of which, Big Ten football coach Pat Fitzgerald had his viral moment.
Sure did.
Earlier this week. And we've got the audio on that. He had this to say when he was asked what he thinks is causing a decline in attendance at college football games. So take a listen.
I think phones, I think technology has been the decline in attendance, number one. I think, you know, watching young people today live like this instead of like that. You know, Stacey and I were out on a date last night, and there was two groups of couples sitting next to us, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm old. Like, not one of the four couples were talking to each other. They were all on their phones. And it just drove me up to... I literally wanted to be like a dad and go, like, give me your phone, talk to each other. I mean, this is pathetic. So it was really, really pathetic. And I think that's just, it's just changed the way a lot of younger people and younger fans intake is all through technology. And I mean, you watch a concert and everybody's holding their phone up. Like, listen, watch, take it in, create a memory. Because they don't go back and watch the videos. They just want to post it on their social media, which is pathetic because it creates a society of, look at me, isn't my life great? Even though when they go home, they're like, I hate myself, I hate my life, everything's wrong. So I think it's a big cause. I think it's the root cause, number one. You know, I think the fans that grew up going and tailgating and the fans that grew up going to the stadiums 4 hours before the games are getting a little older. And I think the next and younger generation of fans are more reliant on technology. They'd rather have 12 TVs set up in their TV watching cave than go to a game and experience the pageantry and the tailgating. So I think it's definitely things that we need to look at as a brand, college football, on how we can maybe create that type of environment and experience while respecting our communities and our neighborhoods to make sure the experiences that are happening don't impede on those neighborhoods.
Okay, so there's Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern coach, and again, there's a lot there, and I've heard a lot of people kind of split it up between the get off my yard rant at the beginning of it. So let's start with that. He was talking about technology and people on their phones and that whole thing being the root cause of the decline in college football attendance. So do you agree with that at all?
I mean, I think it can play a little bit of a role. I mean, I think to his point of, I mean, it's more convenient to set up a few TVs and sit on your couch, and
it is
your refrigerator is closer, and the bathroom is closer. There are no lines, and certainly too, you know, something to consider is how much it costs to go to a game.
And I think that's the bigger factor.
Yeah, I mean, it's, if you want more people in the stands, I mean, lower the ticket prices.
Yeah, which isn't going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, if you're lucky, like Notre Dame has remained stagnant, I think, for the last 3 years, and that's if you're lucky. You're not going to raise them, but most people continue to raise them.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I don't know if you're trying to boil it down to and saying, you know, cell phones or technology is why people aren't going. I think that, you know, he has a lot of things that he's talking about that are very credible as far as maybe not experiencing something to its fullest because you are so distracted or consumed by whatever it is that you're holding in your hand. So,
I mean, for me, it's. I mean, he kind of talks on the other side of it because he's talking about people having their phones up at concerts and things like that and posting it to their social media. But people do that at the games as well.
Right.
You know, so that's a big part of it.
The university does it. They put together media things.
Do your hashtag and we'll show you on the big screen and that
right.
kind of stuff.
Right. Well, even there's replays after every play.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, there's no doubt to me that whether it's the NFL or college, watching a football game is best. It's done best when you're watching it on TV
mm-hmm.
because now it's an experience if you want to go to the game and
right.
and see the game. But you're going to get the best views. You're going to have a much more up close view. You're not going to have, you know, depending on where your seat is, if you're not sitting between the 30s or between the 40s, even. Right at midfield, if you're sitting, you know, down in the end zones, you can't see parts of the field nearly as well, but you don't get that when you're sitting there watching your TV. The NFL is doing more to try to add different technology and things like that, more Wi-Fi. Notre Dame has done some of that, too, with just the boost of the Wi-Fi, but they've done more to try to add that to keep fans engaged when they're at games, the NFL has.
Well, I think that if you're listening to Fitzgerald, what he's saying, it is now, at least in my mind, you have to adapt.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's talking about missing out on some of the younger generation, and maybe that's because the experience is not geared towards them. I think that there has been a shift in most cases at most universities and programs where their stadium experience is now trying to shift to the next generation of football fans, versus maybe the you have to sit in your seat the whole game and watch, versus, you know, standing up and being active and engaged. So, and we talked a little bit about this too with the sports betting side of things, is how could you make that as an interactive part?
Yeah.
You know, I think universities are gonna have to build that into their experience too, because they don't want to miss out on that. So really, that's what it comes down to, is how can you incorporate the technology where it's engaging the fan base as well.
Right. Here's the one part that I guess I would agree with Pat Fitzgerald on. The student tickets don't cost as much. But like the last couple of years when I've been at Notre Dame home games, now like the big games like Michigan, your USCs, and those are the exception. But there are, I mean, when you were still playing, which was only a little bit more, what, right around 10 years ago, I mean, for the longest time, this will be my 20th season, and probably for at least 17 of the seasons covering Notre Dame, that student section was always full regardless. But these last couple seasons, there have been pockets over there where it's noticeably they're not as full as they used to be. So that's like the only place, like, why is that happening? You know, when I how much of what Pat Fitzgerald is talking about with the technology might be a part of that, just the overall interest and engagement. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that at Notre Dame, you know, there could be some disinterest. I would say not every student that comes is a football fan.
Yeah.
It's
but
a
that
very,
is a big social event, just
it,
going
it,
to
it
the
is.
Game. And your
yeah.
games or your tickets don't cost as much
it,
in the student
section. It
100%
is. And you know, I think it always is a bad look, right, when there are pockets in your student section.
Yeah.
You know, you want... Should almost make it mandatory. we're going to take attendance.
This is great. It's part of your grade.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, if it's
call
part
it a phys ed grade
if
or
it's
something.
Part of your grade. You 100 the students.
It'll be full.
They'll 100% be there. Yeah. Incentivize it. How about that? Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. All right. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we haven't got a chance to talk a ton of baseball other than the Notre Dame head coaching situation over the last few shows. So I've got a couple baseball questions I'm going to throw to you. And if we have time, a little bit of NFL as well before we wind things up on today's show. Five-star dive bar, the smoked wing, chicken wing special is the lunch special today. $7 for a pound with fries, $12 for 2 pounds with fries as well. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. John and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch winding things down at Five Star Dive Bar on this Friday in downtown Elkhart and on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We'll kind of go a little rapid fire through some of these here.
Boom, boom, boom.
Evan, NFL.com, right. They've been releasing their top 100 players this week. Jalen Smith came out. I believe he was number 60. He was 63 or 61 last night, the former Notre Dame linebacker. And so he is the second Notre Dame alum, along with Harrison Smith, who came in at number 83, who's on the list. So over under 1.5 more Notre Dame guys will end up in the NFL's top 100.
Over.
Okay. Zach Martin.
Yeah.
He's a lock, right?
Yeah.
He's been on it every year so far.
He's a lock. What was he last year? Do we know?
He was, I've got it right here, 73 last year. No, hold it. He was 71 last year, 58 and 64 the two previous years.
Okay.
Quentin Nelson.
I think so.
He's
right?
Got to be, right?
I would think so too. I think those would probably be my two picks.
Because I think those two are definite. The only other one that Darren mentioned the other day, Zach Rudolph. Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Could he get in there?
Yeah, he may. I don't know. I know he's been on it before.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't remember the last time he was.
I'm going to go over though. I think the two offensive linemen definitely make it.
I'm going to take the two offensive, and if you sprinkle in a third, then yeah, for sure.
Over. Okay, something I've been wanting to talk to you about since this happened: the Atlantic League using the robot umpires. It's
you can
essentially
also steal first base.
Yeah,
too.
That's right. It's essentially radar technology. The umpire has a cell phone in his pocket and an earbud in as the technology makes the call, and then he just stands behind the plate and does whatever the technology tells him to do. What do you think? Do you think we're going to see it in the big leagues in the near future?
Book it.
I think so, too.
you have a structured, you know what to expect.
Yeah.
You take out the human element when it comes to balls and strikes. There'll be less complaining because you're just going to say, hey,
it's what
you
the
guys already know what it is. There's, you know, it's here are your parameters. Those are the rules. Let's
and I
play
mean,
to that.
They don't Major League Baseball obviously doesn't like arguing, even
right.
though the thing with Aaron Boone last week got him as much publicity as anything has in baseball this year. They don't like it. It's eliminated a lot of the arguing about plays on the bases because you can just go to replay and
right.
and watch it. So I don't see – I think it's a win-win. I think you've got to have it at some point.
Pitchers will love it. I think hitters will really like it too.
Yep. All right. Well, that's about it for today. Lucy is ready. She has got her chicken strips and – she's ready for dad
She's
now.
A pistol today.
She is.
Every day.
All right. For Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Steyers. Garrett Kaser in the studio. Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT South Bend.